Namaturatanatayasa. Welcome everyone to today's Dhamma talk. Today I thought I would talk about how we look at the Buddha's teaching, how we look at Buddhism, and there are many people who want to say this or that about the Buddha's teaching, about Buddhism in general. Often when we look at Buddhism, we don't see it as a religion. And while we may not, because it's not like any other system on earth that we might consider to be a religion, most of them focus on the worship of a god or gods or goddesses. Focusing on blind faith, or focusing on different things, none of which are similar to the goal of Buddhism or the practice of Buddhism. And yet Buddhism has had a profound effect on the world, much similar in scope and in nature as other religions. The number of people who claim to follow Buddhism and the devotion which people give to this system and calling it a religion make it often look very similar to other systems which we might call religion. Personally, I'm of the view that it should be called a religion, but not for the reasons that we might normally assume. Normally we understand religion to be a system which binds us to God or binds us to something greater than ourselves. The word religion, of course, coming from a Latin root meaning to bind or so on. And so there was one monk who cleverly said, in that case Buddhism is not a religion at all. Because the Buddha taught us to give up all binds. And the Buddha himself claimed that in his enlightenment he was free from all attachments. And so being bound to anything, either heavenly or worldly, is not in line with the Buddha's teaching. But there's another way to look at this word religion. If we understand it to be coming from the root to bind, we can consider that it means simply that we're bound to certain practices. And as I've said this before, this isn't an obligation or a coerced state. It comes from our own heart when we take up these practices and say to ourselves that these practices are essential, and so we dedicate our lives to them. We say, I would rather, some people even to the extent that they would rather die than break these practices. For instance, the practice of morality. There are people who, due to their understanding and their dedication to the Buddhist teaching, they would rather die before they would kill someone else, or just from their own practice and their understanding of the way things work. So they are bound to certain practices according to the Lord Buddha's teaching, or in line with the Lord Buddha's teaching. Even to the extent that sometimes these practices may not be essential. So, for instance, in the case of becoming a monk or a nun, they might adhere to practices which relate specifically to communal harmony or are simply functional and really not essential in and of themselves, for instance, not touching money and so on. Not essential, but they would keep these rules religiously, we might say. So on this question, I would say that Buddhism very much is a religion in this sense. In the sense that if someone, as I've said, I gave a talk on what it means to be Buddhist. It means to take the Buddha, the Dhamma, and the Sangha as our refuge and to keep the five precepts. And basically what I was trying to say is that it's not that we have any obligation to keep these, but if we don't keep them, then we have no right to call ourselves Buddhists. And for some people this is fine, they don't want to be called Buddhist, but for anyone who does keep these, one could, and they keep them because of the exhortation of the Buddha, or they have learned to keep these from the Buddha, or they agree with everything, with the things that the Buddha said, and they follow according to the Buddha's teaching, and they take the Buddha and his teaching as their guiding light, then this person you would say would be a Buddhist. And it's simply a designation, it doesn't have to exist, but there is a difference for between someone who takes the Buddha's teaching as their guiding light and someone who does not. Another person might change their mind and go on another path and so on. But this isn't exactly what I was hoping to talk about today. I just wanted to start here and say, well, what is Buddhism? Because you don't have to look at Buddhism as a religion, and you don't have to see it in this way, but I would say if you're really going to gain results and progress in the Buddha's teaching, it does have to have a certain level of religiosity. This isn't something that we're just doing as a hobby, where we take time out of our day to meditate, or we take time out of our day to chanting or this or that. It's the goal of our existence, or it's the higher purpose, is the realization of those things that the Lord Buddha taught us to develop and to realize. Because if you just take it sort of as a hobby or something, something external to your main goal in life or so on, then you can't expect that it's going to have the great results that we would hope for, or we would look for, or that one would expect from someone who was taking it to a religious level. And so what I wanted to talk today actually is, what is most important? What is it that we expect to get and hope to get and should hope to get from the Buddha's teaching? I'd like to talk about what is the most important thing about Buddhism, because there's a lot of different ideas about what is important and what we should be focusing on and so on. And there are many issues in Buddhism. Many people are right now debating the issue of whether women, with the women monastic lineage should be reinstated and so on. And there are various ideas. Most people agree that it would be nice to have the opportunity, but they're not sure how to go about it given the technical difficulties and so on. And then there's a lot of people who are against it for reasons of discrimination. Mostly the men, but also some women who think that it's not their place to ordain because they are, I think it's what you call reverse discrimination, or I can't remember. There's a term for that where you oppress yourself because you've been taught to, and so on. But mostly it's a sexism thing. And so there's a lot of argument about this now, and people are up in arms and banishing each other and creating also a big kerfuffle about this. Some people are going ahead and helping women to ordain, and other people are reprimanding them and separating out, and it looks like it's going to be a big argument. And it makes you wonder, well, what is really important here and why we should be so upset about it on either side. Why, if some people want to go ahead and give this opportunity to others, should we be so angry and upset about it? And I think the answer is because people like to get angry and upset, and they're not really dedicated themselves to a religious practice of the Buddhist teaching. And on the other side, you might wonder whether there's a bit too much enthusiasm to ordain or to reinstate the lineage of female monks and so on. I mean, just because it's not the goal to become a monk. The goal is, of course, to become enlightened. And if it comes to the point where it just becomes an issue of equal rights or so on, then not that that's not a good thing, but that it's going to be a hard battle to fight, and one might be weary by the time it's over and too weary to perhaps practice meditation. So, not that I'm not supportive of this addressing this issue, but I think it's important that we look at what's most important. And the Buddha laid out what's most important in his teaching. He said some people, they come and they ordain simply because of the prestige or the honor of ordaining. And of course this applies not necessarily just to ordaining as monks or nuns, but when we come to a monastery or when we come to practice at a meditation center, some people come just for the luxury, the material gain that comes along with it. So you often see homeless people coming into the monastery. This is at the extreme end. Or you see monks who ordain and then sit around not doing anything because it can be so luxurious in Buddhist countries or in places where Buddhism flourishes, because the lay people are so faithful that they support these monks to just sit around and do nothing all day. And so it's easy to become lazy. And once you get this great honor, and it is a great honor to be, even to be in a meditation center, in a monastery, but most importantly to become a monk or a nun, it's a great honor. And sometimes you wonder whether this is, whether people are actually able to see through this. And you see these groups of monastics who seem to just be content in living the monastic life and living the good life, you could say, away from the stresses and the worries of society, which is a great thing, really, but in and of itself, it's not the most important thing. So this, you see communities of monastics who are mostly concerned about monastic harmony and building a monastery and having rules and regulations and meetings and organization. You know, these monks who have all this real interest in making their own robes and making their own bowls and making this and making that, which are all fine and noble things, but you wonder whether it's somehow become the focus in many ways. And so monasticism in and of itself becomes the focus. For meditators, it's only worth noting to the extent that sometimes we can become kind of lazy because of we don't have anything to do. It's important that we understand when we come to a meditation center that we're quite privileged, just as we would be privileged if we had ordained as a monk or a nun, and that we should put our heart into our practice. And I'm not trying to suggest that anything, that our meditators here are not doing that. It's just, this is my role as a teacher to remind us always of something that we already know, but that we should keep in mind at all times. And as a monk, indeed, we have to keep in mind at all times. Every time we walk on alms, we We get this free food that comes from the faith of the lay people, and we have to feel this guilt and this shame when we know that we're probably not living up to the expectations which of being a monk, of being an ordained monk or nun. So it's something that should drive us on, and we should always be concerned that we are actually living up to the expectations of that are placed upon us. So some people, just for this honor and this gain, this material comfort, will come into the Buddhist dispensation, will become monks, become nuns, and so on, and might get lazy because of that. Because it does come, it's just a matter of how you use it. And the second, for some people, they're able to get beyond that, and they're able to at least undertake moral precepts, and they're able to undertake the very basic Buddhist practice of morality. And this is also a very common thing where you see people very intent on keeping the moral rules and getting so obsessed with minor rules and regulations and thinking themselves to be a great monk or a great nun because of their ability to keep the rules. And as a result of all of this, it's easy to become arrogant, sort of looking down on other monks and nuns that don't keep the rules and so on. Or as meditators, we might do walking and sitting meditation. We might keep these precepts for meditators and then think of ourselves as something high up because we can do this that other people can't, and we think that we are something special. And it may be that we are special. It may be that it's not an easy thing to keep these rules. It's not an easy thing to walk and sit in meditation for many hours a day. But the conceit is not something that will, it's not something of any good, any use to us. It's a hindrance to our practice. It's something we have to let go of. When we practice meditation, we have to practice to let go and to give up. So when we start to become conceited and think that now I'm a meditator and now I'm good at this, this is not a beneficial thing. For some people, they're able to go beyond this, and they're also able to practice concentration, to practice to develop their minds, and their minds actually are able to calm down. And this is also a very common stumbling block for people, that when they get to this level of peace and calm, they think that they've made it and that's all they have to do. So you see these monks and who are able to sit in the forest and meditate for hours and days, and they think they're enlightened, and their students think they're enlightened. But then every so often the defilements get the better of them, and they do and they say something that's just ridiculous, and then everyone has to try to find excuses for them and so on. And the truth is, it's because they've just gotten intoxicated by this level of concentration which they've developed. And again, not to say that concentration is a bad thing. The Buddha, all of these things the Buddha explained as being good things. But how he looked at it is, a person who just comes for the material benefit, material well, comfort that one can find in a monastery or meditation center, is like a person who goes into the forest looking for the heartwood of a tree, looking for wood to build a house or so on. To build a house, you need the strong heartwood core of the tree. And so they go around looking at the trees, and then they grab some leaves. They grab some leaves off the trees and come out of the forest and say, "Now I've got the heartwood." And Lord Buddha said, it's just like that sort of person. It's kind of ridiculous, actually. There's nothing you can do with those leaves, and it's amazing that someone could mistake the core of the tree to these leaves, for these leaves, or mistake these leaves for the core of the tree. A person who, a person who simply developed morality and didn't go any further would be like someone who went into the forest looking for hardwood and came out with branches. And the person who is simply content with this level of focus and concentration, this calm state of mind that lasts for a long time, would be like a person who went looking for heartwood and came out with simply bark. Then the Lord Buddha said, but some people go even further than this. They have this great level of concentration and they're not intoxicated by it. They understand its benefit, but they also are able to go past it. And this is important in meditation, that even when good things arise, that we're able to overcome them, because as we start to see, the longer we practice, that even these good things are impermanent, and the more we cling to them, the more suffering that's going to come when they're not there. They're going to create this imbalance in our perception, where we see them as good and see other things as bad, where we're not able to stand with unpleasant situations. But some people are even to go farther, able to go farther than this, the Buddha said, and they're able to practice insight meditation to see clearly. And they're actually able to see clearer than before. They practice and they practice, and their minds become clearer and clearer. And they're able to understand things on a rudimentary level. Some people can understand impermanence, some people understand suffering, some people understand non-self. They see everything changing, they see their mood swinging, now they're happy, overjoyed. Everything's wonderful, and now they're miserable, and they want to do something drastic, and they're depressed, or so on. Up and down and up and down. One day they might be totally calm, or one practice they might be totally calm, and the next practice they might be totally distracted. They see something good come, and then they hold on to it, and then it disappears, and they get upset. And so they see how this changing of moods goes on, and actually their own mind is always changing. It's not stable. And they say, oh, now I understand impermanence. Now I understand the Buddha's teaching. And they say, yes, now I understand meditation. Now I'm a meditator. Yes, now I know all there is to know, and so on. Some people understand suffering. They sit in meditation and they have all this pain. But maybe then they say to themselves, pain, pain. They watch it and then it goes away. And eventually they're able to understand the pain to the point where it doesn't bother them anymore. When it comes up, they say, pain, pain, and it disappears quickly. So they say, ah, now I understand suffering. Now I understand that there's nothing worth holding on to, and they don't cling anymore to the unpleasant feelings. Some people are able to understand non-self, and so when they start to practice, they try to force things, they try to force their stomach, they try to force the movements of their feet, they try to force their mind to stay on the object. And as they practice, they see that the more they force things, the more suffering that comes to them. Their stomach gets all tied up in knots, their walking becomes erratic, their minds become stressed and distressed, and anxious, and headache comes, and so on. And so they let go and they stop holding on, they stop forcing. And they're able to just observe, and sometimes observe very nicely, very, very, very well. But some people get to a very superficial understanding of these things and stop there. And then then this conceit arises. Maybe they've been practicing for some time and they think, now I know everything. And maybe sometimes they even think they know more than their teachers, and so on. And they start to become conceited about it, and they think there's no one but me who can understand like this, or they think they're special, and they want to go out and tell everyone else and explain to everyone else and teach everyone else, and so on. And this wanting to teach other people is usually a sign that we're not there yet, because the more you practice, the more you are able to do away with this desire to show everyone else how wrong they are, and so on. You become more and more interested in your own mind and not interested in other people. You just focus more on your own problems. You'll find the real sign of a good teacher, from what I've seen, and this is looking at the teachers that I've seen. They're not so eager to have you come and be their student, but they do have the sense of eagerness to help you and to make you happy. and make you comfortable. So they will always be looking out for your welfare and benefit, but they don't pull you in through the door, they only open it for you. What I've seen of teachers, that they're not trying to convince other people to come to practice their way and so on, but they're always leaving the door open. They're always trying to keep the door open, and when you walk in, they're always welcoming. When you come to practice, they're always going to give you what you need at that time, but not try to convince you that you have to come back tomorrow and you have to come back the next day and pull you in and so on. So this is, even when we do get some kind of insight and understanding of the Buddha's teaching, then we have to be careful that we don't become over-enthusiastic about it, because it can give rise to ego, it can give rise to defilement. And in the end, we should simply look at our own practice and try to understand more about our own defilements. So it's easy to get derailed at all stages of the path. I guess that's the point here. From the lowest point, from the most basic point and all the way up, it's easy to get off track at any point along the way. And the Lord Buddha said, someone who, even to this extent, that they gain wisdom, but not perfect understanding, they don't get to the point where they actually are released from suffering, where the mind enters into this cessation of suffering. Lord Buddha said, this is like a person who goes in looking for heartwood and comes out with wood, but it's not the heartwood. It's only this pulpy stuff on the outside of the tree. So it's good, it's still not useful, it's still not enough to build a house, it's still not enough to make anything out of. And so the Lord Buddha was trying to say that the heartwood of Buddhism, if Buddhism were to be compared to a very large tree, then the heartwood of Buddhism is this enlightenment, this perfect understanding, the realization which comes with intensive practice and a final emancipation, where the mind becomes free and the mind comes to see that actually everything in the world is like this. It's just a moment in time where the mind suddenly gets it and suddenly says there's nothing in the world worth clinging to and lets go. It's not something intellectual where we say, no, nothing's worth clinging to. It's a sudden realization where the mind just lets go. And it's like the world just disappears for a moment, because the mind is no longer clinging, is no longer seeking, is no longer grasping. It's like you've just disconnected from the matrix, you could say, just for a moment. And that moment is just enough to give you this super mundane realization, so that from then on, you'll look at the world in a whole new way. The world looks somehow lifeless from then on. And as one practices and continues to create this realization, or give rise to this realization and this letting go, the less and less interest one has in external things, in addiction to things in the world, to the objects of the sense and so on. Until finally one is able to give up all addiction and all attachment based on these realizations, based on this momentary glimpse, or this reoccurring glimpse, until it becomes our whole vision, our whole understanding. And this is really the heartwood of Buddhism, is this super mundane realization where we're able actually just let go of everything, and the mind leaves behind the world, even just for a moment, but sometimes for longer periods of time, and eventually even for hours or days. And so when we approach questions, I mean, the question relevant to the past couple of days that I've been discussing on the internet is the question of women's ordination. And personally, I've got nothing against the whole idea. I've had many students ordain as 8-precept nuns. I've even had one nun wearing robes similar to that of a monk and following me on alms. And then not even following me on alms, but going on alms on her own, and I think she's doing that up until this day, and having all of the villagers be very keen and happy and giving her just as much food as they gave me, and not seeing the difference. So, to me, that's really how I look at it. Whether, the whole question of whether they're going to be fully ordained nuns, it's actually kind of repulsive in a sense, because it's such an addiction to this recognition and ego, and it's the same feeling I get from a lot of monks, that they're so attached to the idea of being a monk, and I probably am guilty of it as well. It's very easy to get attached to such a romantic notion of being a monk. But I think in the end it's something that you have to let go, and it's an impediment on the path. It's an impediment in the practice, and it's certainly not, by any estimation, the goal of the Buddhist teaching. The goal, of course, is as I've laid it out. And so whether people can really become ordained or not really become ordained and have recognition in this way or that way, the word monk means one who stays alone. The word nun means one who is nothing. So we should stay alone and be nothing. And though it's nice to have a community that is supportive of that, in the end, it's not that we are this or are that. It's what we aren't that's more important. Most importantly, we aren't attached to anything. We aren't attached to being anything or having or gaining anything. And so, when we approach Buddhism, when we approach the idea of becoming a monk or becoming a nun, it's really only an expedient towards the goal. It's for the purpose of the realization of freedom from suffering. It's not so that we can then go ahead and live our lives and with all these rules and be a good monk or be a good nun. There's really no such thing, and there's no benefit therein. In the end, we should just be a good meditator and be a good Buddhist, even. In the sense that we are able to realize the teachings of the Lord Buddha, realize the fruit of the meditation practice. And so we should always keep this in mind, what our goal is. Our goal is to practice, and as long as we can be in a situation where this is possible, where this is facilitated, everything else should be sort of secondary. And this idea of some kind of equality or recognition, I think, is one of those things that should be left behind. In fact, it can sometimes be healthy for the ego, I think. I mean, I'm not against equality. I think we should all be treated equal for sure, at least in terms of our worth as human beings. But sometimes it can be good for the ego, when we put our teachers up on a pedestal and we have to bow down to them, or even sometimes we have to bow down to people we don't know, we don't think are worthy of it. I've had to do the same thing. I've had to bow down to many monks that I was thinking at the time, boy, this is a real crap deal to have to bow down to this guy. But you do it, and you let go of your ego, and you don't, you try to let go of this idea that I'm better than him, and so on. And you just do it as a matter of course. It's like that. It's not like that, but that's No, this is the idea is to become free and to let go. And if we find ourselves holding on, we can be sure that we're not practicing the Buddha's teaching. And one thing we have to realize is we're living in an imperfect world, and it can't always be the way we want. I certainly have had to learn that as a monk. I think of a monk as being like this or like that. I want to be this way or that way, and I expect all other monks to be like that. And they aren't. And that can be very depressing and can make you very angry at times. I've met with lots of monks who were pretty good monks, but they ended up disrobing out of anger because all the other monks were in their eyes terrible monks, and they felt disheartened. And I think it's sad that it should that w you know we should be so unappealing as a group to people who really have a good intention, but half the problem is our perception of other people and our looking at them and saying, why aren't they the way we think we want them to be? Why aren't they the way we think they should be? Instead of looking at ourselves and saying, how can I become the way I know I should be? And trying to change who we are. Because this is how Buddhism thrives. It thrives from personal investigation, developing one's own self, not trying to be something for other people, but trying to be something for oneself. To be free and to let go of one's own addictions and one's own attachments. So, just some thoughts. I hope it's relevant to the meditation practice that we know where we're going, but it's also relevant on a more broad level in terms of how Buddhism should approach certain issues that are going to come up. I mean, the issues of living in the forest, or the issues of the issues of being a monk, becoming a monk or a nun. And most important, how, what is our religion, what our religious practice should be. It shouldn't be all about externalities. I think most of us are aware of this, but it's easy to get off track. And so this is what I'd like to offer today. And that's the Dhamma talk. So thank you all for tuning in, and hope to see you here next time.